On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The Democrats are on their way. The new majority in the House and Senate is cranking up, choosing leaders, naming committee chairs, grabbing prime office space on Capitol Hill. Come January 4th, when the 110th Congress convenes, Democrats will hold the gavel. And what will they do with it? On ethics and spending and jobs and war? Today we'll hear from two freshman Democratic senators headed in, Claire McCaskill of Missouri and Sherrod Brown of Ohio. On Point News analyst Jack Beatty is with us. Jack, good to have you here.
Hello, Tom. Thank you.
And with us from Washington, party watcher Tom Edsel. He's professor of journalism at Columbia University, correspondent for the New Republic and National Journal. He's currently writing a twice-weekly column for the New York Times. Tom Edsel, thanks for being here.
Good to be with you.
Go to the fundamental dynamic here as the Democrats step into the power chair, Tom Edsel. How do you see their outlook and the sort of divide they're riding, as you describe it?
Well, there's really two wings of the Democratic Party, the internationalist wing and the, for lack of a better word, protectionist wing. This is on the issue of jobs, trade, one of the core issues they face. Sherrod Brown and Claire McCaskill both fall into the latter category. The internationalist wing has really been weakened in this last election.
A protectionist wing, internationalist. Protectionist meaning what? An internationalist, is it code for Reaganomics, for old centrist market-driven economics? Are protectionists the backlash there?
It is a code, and what it is Reaganomics, in a sense. On one side is the idea of accepting globalization and trying to find ways to accommodate to it. The other side really wants to alter treaties to include environmental and labor protections, to reject some treaties altogether, and to insulate American workers from the forces of globalization insofar as that's possible.
Mm. Jack Beatty, what do you foresee out of the gates here? Democrats attacking the big problems that Republicans kind of muffed or created, or Democrats going into a tong war with each other around the polls Tom Edsel describes?
That could well happen. The lobbies are, of course, very strong on both sides, the corporate lobby for globalization as it is and labor for changes such as Tom was talking about. I think that will be a fault line. And I think there's also going to be a fault line with the public. I mean, unless these people understand that they're not there because the public likes the way they look, but they're there because the Republicans got into all kinds of ethics problems. Unless they clean their house, they're going to have a repetition of what just happened to the Republicans. They're on notice that ethics reform, campaign reform, has to be a major part of what they do.
Well, let's go straight to one of the brand newly minted senators coming into the new Senate with the Democratic majority. Joining us right now from Washington, D.C. is Senator-elect from the great state of Missouri, Claire McCaskill. Senator McCaskill, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be with you.
Steep hill that you and the party are coming in to face. What's at the top of your agenda?
Well, I think for the Democratic majority, I'm hoping, I know that you all were just talking about this, but you know, ethics needs to be dealt with in a big way. I think we need to make this more than window dressing. It's got to be substantial. It's got to be significant. It's got to be, I think, we've got to start looking at how the earmarking process is tied to ethics reform, and in reforming that process too. It's ridiculous that we're spending public money in many instances without even so much as a hearing on whether or not this is a good idea or a bad idea. The fact that these projects can go in these bills under cover of darkness with the right lobbyist and the right member, and this is why this is grown exponentially.
Mm. Claire McCaskill,
the number of lobbyists have grown exponentially.
And we've all seen it, K Street spilling over the whole Capitol. But let me ask you, the reporting that's already come out says, you know, here the New York Times quoting Senator Patty Murray, Washington Democrat, saying what's good for the goose is good for the gander. And they're talking there about the spoils of political victory, the very kind of earmarks and pork barrel projects the Republicans got in so much trouble for. Do you think the Democratic Party is really going to take that on and dismantle it, or dive in and gobble it up?
Well, I can only, at this point, I think it's a little presumptuous as a new freshman senator to speak for my colleagues, but I can only...
You're only new once, Senator.
I'm not diving in. This should not be a pork fest. We need to be responsible about this. I'm an auditor coming to this job. I am very serious about making this something that is a signature item of my time in Washington, that we have got to stop the wasteful spending that is ongoing, and we've got to sever the relationship that allows lobbyists from K Street to actually put projects into the appropriations process. Mm. It's wrong, and it needs to stop.
Claire McCaskill, you've been quoted saying on your way in, "I want to help take the swagger out of the step of the Democrats. We didn't have a great victory. We had a narrow margin. That dictates we come together and reach out to Republicans." So what does that mean? Are you there with a big mandate for change or to make nice with Republicans or something in between?
I think in some ways, I think you're going to see me working very hard for change. In other ways, I think that when you watch Washington from afar, and you really have a sense of looking at this process the way most of America looks at it, It's pretty obvious what they've been doing. The Republicans have been trying to get bills in front of the Democrats that make it tough for them to vote on them and get elected. And the Democrats have been trying to block the bills that make Republicans look good. It has been about winning elections. It's been about trying to make the other guys look bad. It's been a team sport instead of trying to solve problems. I'm sincere, and I'm going to be dedicated to trying to, like, hang out in what I call the grand and glorious middle in terms of actually solving some problems. It doesn't do any good to have strong beliefs if you get nothing done. And I really think we can find some problems that we can tackle together. There are people in the Republican Party that are more centrist, just like there are Democrats that are more centrist. And there's nothing wrong with that. You can be principled and still find common ground.
Senator-elect McCaskill, we want to get you on the record on Iraq. It some days lately appears to be in a complete meltdown, swoon, you know, blow up over there. What are you proposing? I mean, you campaigned on Iraq, but now you're elected and you've been watching it unfold even as you prepare to take office. What are you going to come in ready to do to vote for on Iraq?
Well, I think that, acknowledging that there's only one commander-in-chief and that there is a limited role in our Constitution as to what Congress can do. I think when the president brings this supplemental appropriation for $150 billion, that some very tough questions need to be asked, and I will be asking those questions on the Armed Services Committee about the financial aspects of funding the men and women that are on the ground there. I have said very clearly that we need to begin a phased withdrawal, and I think most of the people that are members of my party believe that. Clearly, the American people want change. I'm encouraged that the president fired Rumsfeld right after the election. I think he heard the message. I'm encouraged that Vice President Cheney is over visiting with one of the moderate Arab nations in the region, trying to encourage the countries there to begin to take a role in what's happening in the Middle East. I've been talking about those things for months on the campaign. It appears that they have heard something. I think it remains to be seen, and I think the Gates confirmation hearings will tell us more as to whether or not this administration is willing to acknowledge that they have made serious mistakes and try to find the best option among really lots of really bad options. Mm.
Tom Edsel, we've just got Senator McCaskill for another minute here. What's your question as she prepares to take up her new seat in the Senate?
I'd have two quick questions. One is on trade. How do you plan to deal with the rising tide of Chinese and Indian workers who are really creating a huge competitive labor force for American workers? The other is, I'm curious on Iraq, do you view the whole Iraq venture as a complete failure and a major mistake, or are you more moderate in your assessment?
Claire McCaskill, two big ones there.
I think Iraq has been a major mistake, and I think that it is an example of a foreign policy that was driven in too many instances by political considerations and not by a sophisticated global look at how we really keep our country secure long term. I think that this administration has received failing marks on foreign policy, and Iraq is Exhibit A.
And on global economy, Chinese and Indian labor markets, how do you look at them? What will you do?
Yeah, lots of complicated issues there. We cannot turn back the clock on global trade, but we can do some things to help foster competition and foster American companies. One is by making sure that we have not created any statutory free passes for Missouri companies or American companies to ship jobs overseas. We have done that. There have been instances where the laws have been actually retooled to encourage some of the outsourcing. That obviously needs to be changed. But we also need to look at issues like health care. One of the reasons we have difficulty competing is our companies are trying to provide health care. And the costs of health care are undermining our economy. They are not only really hard in terms of people in my state getting health coverage and being able to afford health coverage, it is hurting our manufacturing base. It's hurting the job.
So you want to take that off their shoulder, nationalize that? What do you do?
Well, I think there's lots of things we need to do, and it is one of those things that I'm loath to talk about in 30 seconds.
Yep.
But one of the things we need to do is stop the increasing of the uninsured pool by stopping this this dismantling of the Medicaid system so that we create more uninsureds, which chase people to emergency rooms, which drives up health care costs, which chases people off insurance.
Senator McCaskill, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
We're talking today with new Democratic senators about their party's plans and challenges as they head into power on Capitol Hill. Just heard there from Claire McCaskill. Sherrod Brown of Ohio coming up in a few moments. On Point News analyst Jack Beattie is with us today, as is Tom Edsel, professor of journalism at Columbia, column in the New York Times these days. And right now, Chris is calling from Falls Church, Virginia. Hi, Chris. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm not only just from Falls Church. As it happens, my neighbor a block down the street is Jim Webb, who just pulled a big surprise and upset Alan in the senatorial race.
Brand new Virginia senator fighting James Webb.
And I'd call people's attention, if their paper has it, I don't know which ones do. This morning's Post has the story that there was an event at the White House and Webb was in the receiving line or was not yet in the receiving line and couldn't be talked into getting in the receiving line.
That is to shake hands with the president.
And Bush finally found him and said, "How's your boy?" And he said, "I'd like to get them out of Iraq, Mr. President." And Bush said, "That's not what I ask you. How's your boy?" And Webb was pretty stiff. He said, "That's between me and my boy, Mr. President."
Yeah,
and
a remarkable exchange.
Commented that he's not particularly interested in having a picture of himself with George Bush on his wall. And I think the born fighting slogan he had, the question is, and McCaskill sort of touched on it, will the anti-Bush people be marginalized or will they gain power? And I think one big question is, will the housing slump spread to the wider economy? And if it does and the economy is really sour, then Bush will have few friends anywhere.
Chris, you're chewing off two big ones there. And let us look at those. That was a remarkable exchange. Michael Shear in the Washington Post reporting today. Tom Edsel, you probably saw it there. Bush saying, "How's your boy?" James Webb saying, "I'd like to get them out of Iraq, Mr. President." The president, "That's not what I asked you. How's your boy?" And the newly elected senator, "That's between me and my boy, Mr. President." The tension right there you could cut with a knife, Tom Edsel. And Chris says, what about it? Are we going to have an anti-Bush crusade on Capitol Hill?
I think Jim Webb is a tough guy, and he stiff-armed the president right in the face. I don't think you do not see the same behavior from Nancy Pelosi, who is making nice with the president, and Harry Reid. Webb is sui generis, and he's going to be his own man. He's very interesting, and he's going to be very interesting to follow. His views, in many cases, do not coincide with the Democratic majority. In many cases, they do. But he is a loose cannon, and I'm not sure he's a reflection of the Democratic Party.
He's a Democratic senator, newly minted, and he'll be standing right there, and the people of Virginia put him there.
No question, and I think he does represent a real breath of fresh air. But and some of his characteristics are the kind that Democrats generally should emulate. Whether they will or not, I don't know. He is a different style of person from what people would associate with Al Gore or John Kerry or many of the senators from the two coasts of this country.
Stiff arming the president right there in a first meeting since the election in the White House. Chris also asked about the economy. To go to that, let me go to another newly elected U.S. Senator, long in the House of Representatives. Senator-elect Sherrod Brown joins us from Lorain, Ohio. He's the Democratic senator-elect there, defeated incumbent Republican Senator Mike DeWine. Sherrod Brown, thank you so much for being with us today.
Glad to be with you. Thank you.
Chris calls in. He asks right away about the economy. Everybody's watching what's going on with housing. That's not the only thing going on out there. The economy was right at the heart of your campaign. Now you're headed into power. What do you intend to propose to do to fight for on the economic front?
Well, I think that Democrats need to do what we said we'd do, and that's change. That means we increase the minimum wage quickly, something that hasn't been done in 10 years while Congress gave itself six pay increases during those 10 years. We need to help seniors with the price of prescription drugs by negotiating directly with the drug industry on behalf of 40 million Medicare beneficiaries, the same way the VA does it on behalf of 7 million veterans. We should up the earned income tax credit and reward work, people who are playing by the rules and working hard and making $30,000 or $35,000 or $20,000 or $25,000 or even less a year ought to get some tax advantages. This Congress has shown great interest in giving tax breaks, obviously, to the wealthiest people and not shown much interest in the working poor and in the middle class. This government for the last 5 years has betrayed the middle class, and it's time we step up. That means put a moratorium in these trade agreements, something I know of great interest to one of your panelists. On the other side of what I say, I think, from reading his stuff.
Tom Insel, yeah.
But I'll let him speak for himself, although he certainly did in his recent New York Times op-ed piece.
Yes, he has. And we'll look at that. Senator, let me ask you, on exactly that front, I mean, the Democrats have their own divisions here. People see the world in all kinds of ways. I'm looking here at the new Business Week magazine, and the cover is, you may have seen it, big sort of campaign button says, "What the election won't change. Global forces have taken control of the economy." They point out that not this Christmas, but next, for the first time, maybe ever, the cost of imported goods and services will exceed federal revenues. And they say, what does that mean? It means that for the past 70 years, Washington, that is the federal government, has been the 800-pound gorilla, more powerful than any other force in the U.S. economy, and that's not true anymore. So you've got a big agenda on the economy, but is it out of your hands? Is it out of the government's hands with globalization?
No, it's very much in the hands of Congress. I don't mean Congress dictates everything goes on the economy, but Congress writes the rules on our domestic economy in many ways, from everything from minimum wage to various kinds of environmental and worker safety regulations and all of that.
But is globalization bigger than that? If you write rules that increase costs, does it just roll over you?
On the global economy, why should we, when we say capitalism works, it's dynamic and it does, but we need rules in our domestic economy. Why can't we, as the largest, most lucrative market in the world, do the same? China sells 35% of its exports to the United States. Yet we do nothing really to have any impact on what China on child labor in China, on their on the way that they calculate their currency and all that kind of thing. We're their biggest customer. They need to listen to us, and we should not be the receptacle, if you will, of so much of Chinese labor practices that way.
Tom Insel, we don't have to debate this right here. And Senator, I'll be right back to you, but let me just ask Tom, what do you see here? First of all, are Senator Brown's fellow Democrats going to rally around him? And he says, we make the rules here. Let's make the rules here. Can Congress still make the rules, or does globalization make that history?
I think a lot of what Senator Brown wants to do is very well-intentioned and good. The question is, how effective will it be? This country has had a dramatic decline in unionization. A lot of that's been blamed on the National Labor Relations Board. But in fact, a lot of it is due to the fact that we have this massive global competition, and it's very hard to just close that off. And this globalization, as I understand it, and I'm not that expert at it, but that the escalation in labor competition from China and India has just suddenly surged, and we have had striking productivity in both the Clinton years and the Bush years. In the Clinton years, it paid off with relative equal distribution of the benefits to most economic classes or quintiles. In the Bush years, it has not paid off that way. And you can blame it in part on policies, but a lot of people think that this labor competition that has become something that no one has figured out how to deal with is overwhelms even favorable developments in this country.
Senator Brown, are you going to be a voice in the wilderness on this? Can you get anything like a majority behind you between sympathetic Democrats and maybe some Republicans?
The fact is, against the advice of all the Washington pundits who simply dismissively label people like me as protectionists, when in fact they never label our trade policy now as protectionist when it protects the drug companies and protects Hollywood films. They only call us protectionist if we want to protect workers and protect the environment. But the fact is that every single freshman Democrat that won this year has a record of fair trade, not free trade, and advocate. I won my election in Ohio, and Ohio's not that different from the rest of the country. Granted, we've had more job losses in blue-collar jobs, but people around this country don't like our trade policy, and they even Bill Clinton in his 8 years evolved into a very different trade policy his last year in office than his first stint, and increasingly so as his 8 years wore on. And the fact is that we had, when I ran for Congress in 1992, we had a $38 billion trade deficit in this country. Today it's $820 billion. That's got a lot to do with the way we write the rules, the way we give tax breaks to companies that outsource instead of tax incentives for those companies that manufacture domestically, the way we pass trade agreements that help investors but do nothing for workers and undercut the environment. We can't dictate everything to the world. I don't want to do that. But we're also the wealthiest, most lucrative, most attractive market in world history, and access to our market should be based in part on paying decent wages, taking care of the environment, having a fairly arrived at currency, and ultimately treating their workers the way that we should treat our workers. And instead of pulling standards down around the world and in our own country, and as Tom knows and others know, we have seen what's happened with wages in our country. People in the last 5 years have not seen their wages go up unless you're in the top 1 or 2%. His own newspaper's written that several times, and we know that. But the solutions have been elusive because nobody really has taken on these trade agreements. I mean, Congress has more and more moved against them. They're closer and closer in votes on the House floor and the Senate floor, but it's going to be a new era in 2007. And just because columnists and editorial writers who never lose their jobs to these trade groups, because they like to throw the word protectionist around, doesn't mean that the public doesn't understand this.
They don't lose them yet, but there may be a columnist in Bangalore gunning for Tom Edsel's chair. I don't know.
Perhaps.
Jack Beatty, what about it? Do you think this senator-elect can swing this stick? And can we legislate our way out of the pickle he's describing that's hit a lot of people in this country?
Senator, this is Jack Beatty. Let me ask you a question. A couple of years ago, the AFL-CIO commissioned a study by a Columbia University law professor that voluminously documented the grotesque and, in some cases, barbarous labor practices prevailing in China, and then went on to estimate that anywhere between 10 and 80% of the price advantage in the China price that is putting so many of our workers at risk is owing to those labor practices. Question to you, our trade laws forbid and allow us to sanction product dumping when a nation sells its products over here for less than what it would sell them in its own country. Do you think it's time that we change those laws to have to be able to sanction social dumping, where a country like China essentially dumps its social system, its repressive practices on our market?
Yeah, that's the AFL actually asked the Bush White House to invoke Section 301 on that issue, on that specific issue, and the White House just refused to stand with American workers and do that. That's part of the problem. It's clear that this country, that finally our elected officials are catching up with what the public thinks about trade and thinks about this job loss. I mean, most Washington reporters, and I don't mean anybody in particular, but most Washington media, the people that we see on the talk shows, they never go to Jackson, Ohio, and talk to locked out workers who are making $11 an hour and have been locked out because they just want to keep the $11 an hour and the company wants to pay less, and so they haven't signed a contract or don't go to, haven't been to Middletown, Ohio, and seen a bunch of workers who have had the same kinds of problems. I mean, people that are covering our trade policy really aren't seeing, and that's why they're all of one mind. I mean, every newspaper editor in the country almost believes these trade policies are a great thing, but they're not working for our country. There's such a disconnect between the media and between the voters, and the elections this year showed that.
Senator-elect Brown, we've got listeners who would like to speak with you.
Sure.
Let me go to Smyrna, Tennessee, and Paul. Paul, you're on the air with Senator-elect of Ohio, Sherrod Brown.
Yes, in light of the fact that the last Senate had voted for an amnesty bill and Social Security for illegal aliens, I just wonder what the Democrats have in mind to work on our immigration problem, which pulls wages down, particularly for low-income workers who have traditionally been Democrats, causes a lot of social social problems such as crime and hospital crowding. What are we going to do about these illegals that are in the country?
Senator-elect Brown?
I don't know what the Senate's going to do, but I do know where I think we start. I think we're going to continue to have this debate on how high the wall should be in the border, how long the wall should be along the 2,000-mile-plus border, how many agents or military people or state police or INS agents, whomever we station at the border, how many of them we have. We're going to keep debating that unless we do two other things, and that is, one, enforce sanctions against employers who break the law by hiring illegal workers so that when there's an illegal immigrant bust, if you will, at a plant or wherever it is, that it's not just the workers get arrested, but the employer who broke the law also get sanctions against him. The second thing we need to do is fix the North American Free Trade Agreement. 1993, there were only 3 million illegal workers in the United States. Today, there are 11 million. Even though Bill Clinton and Republican leadership in 1993 during NAFTA promised that they would that this would end the immigration problem. The other thing that's happened, which makes immigration mostly an economic problem, is that there are 19 million more Mexicans living below the poverty line today than before NAFTA passed. NAFTA helped make Mexico a poorer country as a result of this trade agreement, and that's put more pressure on our border. So,
and front and center, will you ally with President Bush on his guest worker program?
I don't know. I believe that we should. I am for a guest worker program. I don't know if I would support what the president's constructed because I haven't seen his plan this year. But I mean, you can keep steering it back to that. But until we fix the underlying problem of immigration, that NAFTA helped to make Mexico a poorer country in so many ways. That it put more pressure on the border because more Mexicans want to leave. And no matter how high we build the wall and how much security we put on the border, we're never going to be as successful as we need to be until those problems are dealt with south of the border and until illegal immigrants, when employers hire illegal immigrants, they're penalized too.
We're talking this hour with new Democratic senators about their party's plans and challenges as they head into power on Capitol Hill. Claire McCaskill of Missouri with us earlier, right now with us from Lorain, Ohio, Sherrod Brown, Tom Edsel's with us as well, and Jack Beatty right now. Willie's calling from Kalamazoo, Michigan. Hi, Willie, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I want to say the number one thing I want to see from the Democrats is clean energy. I want to see clean energy, clean energy, clean energy. In 2005, every single Democrat in the Senate approved of a bill that has already been written called the Clean Edge Act. It was a comprehensive plan to make America energy independent by 2020. It has ethanol, biodiesel, increased fuel efficiency in cars, wind energy, solar energy, all that good stuff that saves energy rolled together into one act designed to make us energy independent by 2020. Every single Democrat from the last Congress has already approved of it. We now have the majority. All you need to do is bring that bill up for a vote. I want to hear a guarantee that the new Democratic Congress will bring the bill that they wrote last year up for a vote this year, now that they have a chance to pass it.
Let's see if we can hear it, Sherrod Brown. You've got a lot of factories in your neck of the woods. Detroit has not looked fondly on clean energy drives. What do you say to Willie? You hear what he wants.
Yeah, I hear what he wants. I support what he wants. I can't speak for the Democratic majority. I also understand that in the Senate, which has a very different set of rules, you need 60 votes to cut off filibuster. I don't know that I would imagine we'd get some Republicans to vote for this too. I think what we do on energy is so very important. One of the things I talked about in my campaign was to work to make my state a Silicon Valley of alternative energy, with everything from ethanol to better conservation, including higher mileage standards, all of that. A more difficult position in a state like Ohio that has a lot of auto industry, as
right.
as his city of Kalamazoo, his state does too. But and especially what we do with wind power and with solar and with fuel cells and all of that. And I think there's that will matter very much in our trade deficit. We send about $1 billion a day out of our country to buy oil from countries that don't much like us and countries that we don't much like. Doing wind turbines and solar panels can take us a long way in terms of energy independence and creating jobs. One real quick story.
Yeah.
Oberlin College, a small liberal arts school just outside my district.
Sure.
There's a building, the largest building on any college campus in the country, that's fully powered by solar energy. Yet the builder of that building had to go to Germany and Japan to buy the solar panels because we don't make enough of them in this country. And my understanding, it's the same for wind power components and other things. And that's the way. That's one of the ways we deal with these trade issues. One of the ways we deal with creating middle class jobs.
But let me ask you. I mean, you've been around Washington for a while. You'll be new to the Senate, but you're no stranger to Congress or Capitol Hill. You know the Bush administration fighting before the Supreme Court today on emissions and clean air, carbon, all that. Do you sense among Republicans, if it's going to take 60-plus votes to do something here, do you sense a Republican readiness to do something on clean energy, as Willie puts it? Are they hearing that from their voters ready to really change policy?
I sense a move from Republicans overall that they're not so close to the president now. Some have pointed fingers. They're not so willing to follow the president no matter what he does. And I see on everything from Iraq to minimum wage to maybe even the drug benefits, the negotiating drug prices bill, and on several of these major issues, and no reason not on clean air and clean energy issues. That Republicans in the House and Senate are going to be moving the president a little bit, because he's dug in on a lot of these issues. But when he sees prominent Republicans in both houses saying they're going to work with the Democrats on some of these issues, I think we're going to see some movement in this country. And I'm hopeful that the president takes his cue from leading Republicans on a variety of different issues. When he sees a minimum wage pass both houses, with a third of the Republicans joining 95% of the Democrats, I'm hopeful the president will say, I ought to sign this. And the same with several of these other issues. And I'm hopeful that he will have paid attention to the elections, number one, and paid attention to other Republicans in the House and Senate who are paying attention to the elections and moving forward.
Willie in Kalamazoo, thanks for your call. Paul's calling from Seekonk, Massachusetts. Hi, Paul, you're on the air.
Hi, all. Hey. I don't disagree with everything you guys are saying, but I just have a trouble believing that any of it is going to come to pass. And they asked me about the immigration thing, and then we talked about clean energy. And I guess my question boils down to, can the moderate parts of the Democratic Party suppress the far liberal? Because, I mean, just on the clean energy, We up here in Massachusetts, we're trying to put a wind farm off Cape Cod, and it gets pushed out by our two senators who don't want to see it there.
So you think that even energy is a left-right-center issue, Paul?
Well, I think that each individual goes for their own little quirk, that they want to see. In this case, it's the view off Nantucket that Senator Kerry and Senator Kennedy don't want to disrupt.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let us pick it up around this issue of the polls in the party. Sherrod Brown, you know what Tom Edsel has written here, The Struggle Within, saying that centrists and liberals in the party are set for a Donnybrook here, and they could end up losing their majority because independents, he says, and many others observe, brought the Democrats their victory earlier this month. Do you anticipate a kind of hammer and tongs battle within the party over whether they're going for what have been seen as liberal interest group agendas or for a more moderate centrist agenda?
Well, I just don't buy into this that politics is left or right to most voters. I know it is to politicians. I know it is to columnists and pundits that it's you're on the left, you're on the right, whatever that means, liberal, conservative. The fact is, it's whose side are you on? And look at every single major issue. A lot of Washington people will call the following five or six issues liberal. They'd say it's liberal. Minimum wage, direct negotiation of drug prices, a Medicare law that supports seniors rather than the drug companies, an energy bill that supports clean air and alternative energy rather than the oil companies, a vote against the Iraq war, for embryonic stem cell research. All of those are issues that I ran on. Some people in Washington would call those liberal issues or liberal positions. I call it mainstream progressive values. When every one of those issues, it's not a question of, is that too liberal for the country, that the centrists versus the liberals? I don't buy all that. When I hear people, when I heard on election night and for the 2 weeks since or the 3 weeks since, a lot of the political pundits in Washington will say over and over that a bunch of conservative, moderate centrist Democrats won this election. I don't know what that means, because on every major issue, on trade agreements, on the war, on minimum wage, on the drug industry, on the oil industry, we are right down progressive policies and politics and values are right down the center of America. So I just don't understand even the presumption that is made, the assumptions that are made when reporters are saying it's a fight between the liberals and the centrists. I guess I don't. Maybe I'm just too blind to see it. But I think in Ohio they don't think of it that way. Maybe you do in Washington, but in Ohio it's which side are you on? Are you on the side of the drug companies? Are you on the side of the big companies that outsourcing? Are you on the side of the oil industry? Or are you on the side of middle class Ohio?
Yeah, we hear it. Tom Edsel, join the fray here. You're getting a lot of pundit razzing from the senator elect this morning. Where do you see the icebergs here, Tom?
Tom has written stuff before. We've worked here. He's a good reporter. I just don't like his use of word protectionist all the time.
Tom, what about it?
Fair enough.
Where's the iceberg, if it's out there, on this issue of polls and liberal center, you know, the rest?
I think the senator is absolutely correct that the voters did speak in the fashion that he's describing. And the Democrats have an agenda. One, what I question is, in some cases, whether that agenda is going to pay off in the way these voters want, in terms of real results, and the senator and
What do you mean by that, Tom Edsel?
Well, whether, for example, stopping all a moratorium on new trade agreements and the addition of wage and environmental standards in any future trade agreements, which are perfectly laudable, but whether that will have any real effect in terms of helping the voters that the senator is concerned about and who did voice their views very strongly in the last election. I think that the Democrats have had historically real difficulties once in power. They had real difficulties in 1993-94 when they were in power. They had real difficulty in 1977-78, the last two times you had clear Democratic majorities across the board and the White House. They have basically screwed up both times. Whether or not
by going too far left is your argument, right?
Often they do go off the deep end doing things that look to the general public like they are pursuing agendas for special interests, just as Republicans do. But in the case of Democrats, they tend to be liberal special interests.
I'll put that to the senator.
Tom, wait a second, Tom. Yes. When 1993, NAFTA, was that cave into the liberal special interests? That cost Democrats a lot of House seats, the support of NAFTA. Right?
Jack, what do you say here?
Well, yeah, and not only that, Lane Kirkland went to the White House and he said, "Listen, I got $5 million. I can spend that $5 million advertising for Clinton Care, universal health care for everybody, or I can spend it against you, lobbying against NAFTA. What will it be?" And Bill Clinton said, "It'll be NAFTA." He picked the Republican trade deal as against an extension of the New Deal idea to medical insurance. That was more important to him. He made his choice.
Well, Robert Rubin was talking to him, and they said there's a sun coming up on a new era here. It's going to globalize whether you like it or not. I think that's an open question. Zach's calling from Alexandria, Virginia. Zach, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom.
Hey.
Lobbying reform. I think if you look at where the country stands, the number two issue behind Iraq that the new Congress and the new Senate could take over is lobbying reform, rolling back influence of lobbyists on the Congress and rolling back the amount of earmarks that they can get because of the lobbying.
The pork barrel. Do you think the Democrats will do it, Zach?
I think if they can't do it, they need to give, you know, an earnest effort to show that they did, you know, show the public that they were elected for change and that they're advocating for it.
Sherrod Brown, how about it? New York Times came out, you know, two-fisted here, sort of talking about Daniel Inouye in Hawaii. Cheek by jaw with Republican Senator Ted Stevens, old school guys who see pork as the spoils of victory. Will Democrats change the lobbying system, the ethics, the earmarking, the pork, or will they indulge?
Well, I mean, I'm hopeful that they do all of that, that we do all of that. I'm not optimistic that all of it happens, but I know that Harry Reid's first bill is going to be lobbying reform, and it's going to have teeth, and it's going to be strong. It's probably not going to go far enough on one element of that, and that's the earmarking issue. But on a whole host of other issues, I think it will be strong, and it needs to be. And Congress, we've got to make sure that there is no doubt where we stand on these ethics issues, because that matters to people at home if it's done right. The earmark is a separate question in part. It's part of that, but it's also a separate question that Congress won't address as well as I'd hope we would. We know that earmarks have doubled in the last 5 years, mm-hmm. or maybe even more. I think an increase of more than 100%. I'm not sure. I'm sure we will cut down the number of those. Whether I don't think we'll eliminate them. I wish we would move towards that. I know that David Obey, the chairman of the House Appropriations Committee, has never liked earmarks. I think he will be a major push on scaling them back. I will support that. I'm hopeful that my party moves more rapidly in that direction than people think probably that we will.
Let's go to Iowa City, Iowa, and Mary. Hi, Mary. You're on the air.
Thanks. You know, I'm tired of the Democrats singing the same old tune. And they don't seem to realize the same people, the type of people that put Hitler into office, also put Bush in office. We had the industrialists, which would be our capitalists. And we had the aristocrats, which is that 1% that pays no income tax.
So what tune do you want to hear, Mary? What are you listening for?
I want them to go back, study history, and I want them to revamp themselves. They're talking the same old yang, and we're not going to win. The middle class is going to be wiped out, and the Democrats are still going to be talking about some same old.
Sherrod Brown saying he wants to put off any new trade agreement. He wants China to have labor standards. Is that what you want?
Now, look, I've heard that so much, and everybody who's got any good sense, who knows anything about history, know we've heard this. So let's get out there and do something new. Yeah, they talk, and we need the majority. You know, you got to get yourself together.
Mary, we've got it. Sherrod Brown, there's a tall wall of skepticism staring at you in Iowa City.
Well, we have heard talk of it, but we haven't done it, and I want to see us do it. I mean, I think that this she's right in the sense that there's been a lot of talk about the change in these trade agreements. We've never been able to do it. This is the first time that trade has been a major issue in many Senate races and House races around the country. There is not unanimity, but there's overwhelming support for a different trade policy among the new members of Congress, including some Republicans. And I think we're going to see a very different direction on trade policy.
Sherrod Brown, I know we've got to let you go. We're grateful for your time today. We wish you the best as you head into the Senate. And thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks to all of you. Jack and Tom, thank you very much, too.
Senator-elect Sherrod Brown joining us there from Lorain, Ohio. Jack Beatty, what do you hear?
Well, it seems to me he's got it right, at least this far. The issue before us now is, will there be an American middle class? Will what we all assume to have been America in the post-war era, will that continue? Or are we going to have a bifurcated sort of Latin American system
here? You think the middle class can be legislated, though, in a globalized economy?
I think that, the globalized economy is an artifact of legislation to begin with.
Really?
Well, trade deals, mobility of capital allowed by the law, all sorts of things. This just didn't happen. This was partly an artifact.
But markets aren't made out of fog. I mean,
no, but markets have been here, for example, regulated. They can be regulated. I mean, what we need, it seems to me, is we need something like an international New Deal. The New Deal was a way in which the competitive situation vis-a-vis states. No state could reform because the industry would take its mills
and knit
it
all together.
And it was only with the New Deal that you're able to get pensions and all the rest of it. We need something like that in international.
Tom Edsel, we just got a few seconds. An international New Deal, is that the way to Democratic success or to the exit next time out?
Jack is a very good friend of mine, and I like him very much, but I think he's whistling in the dark.
Wow. Well, we'll see what candles light up when the party comes to town. Tom Edsel, professor of journalism at Columbia, writing now for New Republic and National Journal and New York Times. Great to have you with us. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Jack Beatty, always good to have you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.